now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Tara Fraser. On today's show, an acclaimed hit show with a rather naughty name.
Oh, yes.
Returns to West End.
And Ez is back with another quizery on the amazing Elton John.
All that today.
Right here on Shout Out. Oh, rude names, rude names. Oh, Lara will be proud of you, mate.
I'm sure she will be.
So, hello, how are we all?
Yeah.
Sorry, I haven't been here the last few weeks.
No, you've been poorly. Yeah. And then you were in France.
Yes, I do, yes.
Gay Paris.
Gay Paris.
Oh, straight to the point. Steffi just did, you know, a bit like the naughty name. She'll be the one.
Yes. I've never seen that on a script before. I'm still not convinced we're allowed to say it, but you promised me we are.
Wakes you up in the morning.
What, the hen?
Yeah. No, it's not a hen. It's the cock that crows.
There you go.
Jeez.
Yes. Returning to the West End, I believe, after a
It is. Run. It's been around the world. And also, it's quite an old play and it's been done quite a few times now. Yeah. But it's just done a tour of the planet and it's coming back to London.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I know Starlight Express is finishing very soon.
Oh, are you going to rush up and see it then? With your glitter on?
I would love to go see it, actually. I remember seeing it when I was quite young. I was about 11 or 12.
A few years ago then?
Yeah, just a few, yeah. And I can remember we go to London every, like, Christmas, see the lights and the like. And I can remember we used to walk past things like Starlight Express. I'd be, oh, I'd love to go see that because I used to love roller skating. And then when we were about 12 and my parents said, come on, let's just go in and have a look, shall we? So we go into where it is. And my dad says, come on, sneak your head down through the door. So I said, we can't, we haven't got tickets. He went, surprise!
Oh.
And we actually sat and watched it.
Right, isn't it?
Please describe the outfit you wore when you were roller skating.
Jeans and T-shirt.
No, don't believe that for a moment.
What I bet you it was wear? Green lycra.
Yes. Thank you, Terry. No,
a few years later, it was a shell suit.
That'd be 60s and 70s, surely, not the
80s, 90s.
Glittery boots.
No, it wasn't like that at all. It's not like your heyday.
Leg warmers.
Yes.
Pink hot.
How did you know, Tara? I did have a pair of pink leg warmers. Yes. And I did go roller skating.
They were great leg warmers, weren't they? Because they did exactly what they said.
And you had a matching band around your head to match your leg warmers.
And the wrist.
Would have to be then lime green if it's pink, hot pink and lime green. Was that the mandatory two colours? Yes.
You know there is a roller rink here in Bristol. Oh, yeah, it's over where the old Staples
fantastic.
Used to be.
Fantastic.
Next to Trojan Gym.
Yeah.
Are we all going then?
We could do, yes. Yeah,
just wrist protectors.
So I don't know if you'll be listening tonight, but a friend of ours...
I can't fall down. never get up.
I don't know if you'll be listening tonight, but a friend of ours called Andy Medlin's just recently been learning how to skate in a time of his life.
Yeah, they do.
I hope you're getting on well with it, Andy.
They do lessons so you can actually learn how to skate properly rather than pretend.
Would they let me take my Zimmer on?
Yeah, I reckon so.
It's got wheels on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about roller derby for over 70s?
Sounds good to me. Bring it on, Tara.
I have a perfect plan, actually. We just tie a haggis to the back of you and set Steph free. And she'll just chase after you the whole way around the arena for the rest of the evening.
But roller derby is nice so gay. I mean, it's like...
I don't get how they didn't introduce the haggis into Wales. But the Welsh just prefer the sheep.
Or leeks.
Got leeks.
Daffodils.
Barrel breath.
No, leeks Irish, is it not?
It's no Welsh.
It's Welsh, isn't it?
Some dragon.
The dragon's Welsh, yeah.
Yeah, but it's a particular type of dragon, I believe.
Red dragon.
Speaking of which, actually, we're at the Irish Film Festival next week.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Seeing a new movie. Yeah, so we'll have a report on that coming up soon. It looks fabulous. And you'll know why I say that when you find out what the movie is. Mm. So, yeah.
Busy week next week.
It's got Rupert Everett in it.
So that's next week's show then.
Well, no, we won't have watched it. We'll be watching it at the time the show's on.
Yeah, you'll be on your own
the week afters.
Yeah,
it could be the week after. Yes. Yeah. So, and then of course it's like start countdown to Pride, and
it is now. Yeah,
all that come around very here. Quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, another year, Steph.
No, right.
Do you see the EHR, the equalities? There's all that rewriting going on.
1 year. That went quick. Mm. The Daily Mirror put some great articles out over the last day or two.
Maybe they're trying to backpedal a little
bit. Well, I don't know. It's written by either a trans person or supporters, one of the two, but it was really well written. But then the pylon comes from your Mirror readers, reform voters. And
are they Mirror readers or are they just fans of J.K. Rowling?
I think I
point both in that direction.
That Venn diagram is almost round.
Yes, I know that the former head of the Equalities Commission, she left, didn't she?
Yeah.
House of Commons or House of Lords?
House of Lords, sorry.
Because I know she's pushing to stop abortion. Yeah. So going down that route now.
Well, you see, that's a thin edge of wedge, isn't it?
Everyone was warned.
It's coming.
Yeah. You'll be next.
Be glad you're not in America where they're trying to track all the trans people. Medically as well.
Yes, there's all sorts going on over there. Yep. So, although I have just seen that, I think the Supreme Court have now ruled that marriage equality must stay.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
unless Trump writes something in
There's crayon.
Yeah.
So, didn't he accuse the head of Iran of being gay?
He did say that there was a gay head of Iran, and nobody found it particularly funny.
Did you see his AI generated image of him
as Jesus?
Jesus.
Yeah.
Who? I think about how to annoy your own right wing people.
In fact, many Christian conservatives were offended by that.
Very, very offended. Yeah. Very vocally offended. So he turned around and said, "Well, no, it was a Red Cross thing."
He reckoned it was a doctor, but then the memes started pouring in.
Oh yes.
From all the doctor show, they were wearing robes.
Yes. I saw that.
Well, of course, he's taking on the Pope.
He
slagged off the Pope, and the Pope has been very good about it and said, I do not fear Donald Trump.
I tell you what, Iran are making some cracking Lego moves. Take that, Mr. Trump.
Probably not with Lego's permission, I hasten to add.
Don't be silly. No, but they are really well made. Yeah. So whoever's doing it is a professional.
It's a different war now, isn't it? I mean, that's amazing what's coming out there.
Yeah, I've got no time for the Iranian government, the Ayatollahs and that, because the subjugation of their own population and the murder of their own population. Yeah, but Trump's just a lunatic.
Yeah, bomb them out of existence.
A whole civilization, different level.
That kind of puts you in genocide, the kind of Hitler zone, doesn't it?
Anyway, before we get on to that, should we have a little bit of your...
Lighter.
Oh, the theatre production.
Yes.
Tess and Michael on Cock. Following sold-out runs in Canada and international tours to Japan, South Africa and Brazil, the new production of Cock comes to London this spring. I'm joined by Tess and Michael. Now, you've got great spelling, Michael, to Toronto. Is that really your name, or are you not going to disclose that?
No, that's a common question I get, and my snide answer sometimes is, why would I change my name to that? It's my ancestors come from what is now Belarus, and when they came to Canada in the early 1900s, Canadian customs altered whatever they saw on the paperwork and blessed us with Toronto with a W. And
that's a lovely story, isn't it? To always go back on when you get some silly journalists asking you that inane question. Because it's very interesting.
It's a common story of Jewish immigrants. And
that's Cock. Now, who wants to go with the intro to this?
Basically, Mike Bartlett's play is about John, who is a gay man who's been in a relationship with his partner for about 7 years. And they have a bit of a rift, and then John, by some chance, meets a woman, and they, as a surprise to him and anybody else, they fall in love. But then they have a little rift, I guess, and John goes back to his boyfriend, but he keeps going back and forth between his boyfriend and the woman that he's met. And finally, they both sort of had enough. And the boyfriend says, you know what, we're going to have, let's finish this. Let's all get together and we will have dinner and you're going to make a decision. And, but the boyfriend is convinced that the decision is in his favor, while the girlfriend is convinced that the decision is in her favor. And drama ensues.
Yeah, I bet it does. Now, it's been playing around the planet. Have both of you been involved in that all the way around?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Every production. Yep.
Okay. Yes. So what part do you play then, Tess?
I play W. Her name is W in the script, but we've decided to call her Sarah in our secret world. I play the woman, the female presenting person that kind of enters the play and shakes things up a bit, a lot.
Obviously, you can't say too much because we want some surprises for when the audiences pile in. Yeah. Is there many people taking part in the theatre production?
Like who on the creative side?
Yeah,
like
the amount of people involved. Yeah, production, lighting, and actors.
It's a pretty intimate group. There's four actors. There's our director, a stage manager, and then our producer, Arkady, is often with us. But this is the smallest group that I've toured with, and it's really wonderful. It's like a very lovely, loving cocoon of people. We've done a lot of traveling now. We've gone all the way to Japan and South Africa and Brazil, and it's a very wonderful, tight-knit little community. Yeah, we brought our production of Sweeney Todd to London years and years ago, and that was probably like 10 actors, and we brought that to Argentina as well. So this is a much more intimate little group, and it's wonderful. It really feels like a nice family now.
Do you have many changes? Do you have to rush off behind the curtains and then do a quick change and then rush back on?
Yeah. I have one where I do get pretty much completely naked. Okay. And so it's great. It's a very trusting group, and you know, the dressing room situation, especially because we do the show immersively in a lot of different kinds of spaces, some really untraditional. So it's always just like, there's another actor named Kevin, who I just have to say, okay, this is where I'm doing my quick change in this venue. So just turn around facing that way this time. And it's great. I feel very safe and I feel very trusting, but yeah, I have a pretty quick change, which I've always made, and it's not something to worry about, but it's always very delightful to run off stage and be like, where did I set that this time? Because sometimes we'll be in venues for like one show or two shows, so you're trying to remember in the moment, like, where did I put all my clothes?
So do you do it all yourself? You haven't got like two or three people waiting behind the curtain for you where you pile into them and they put on your top and your trousers or your dress? And
no, not on this one. This one isn't going to get an Instagram 30-second quick change with four amazing dressers off stage in a big musical. This is just me flailing around in the dark, hoping that my nipple stickers have stayed on.
Love it. Well, thank you for that information. Thanks, Tess. Michael, are you actually just in production, or do you step foot on the stage as well?
Oh no, I play the boyfriend in the show. So I've been in with Talkers Free Theater for over, oh my gosh, 12 years now in a variety of productions over the years, including the Sweeney that Tess mentioned. It's something that's a beautiful aspect of working for this company in Canada, is that Arkady Spivak, who's our artistic producer and runs the company, really works to allow artists to who might find themselves on stage primarily, which is what Tess and I do. But I also have an arts administration background, so that's how I sort of ended up falling into doing an administrative part of the administrative side of the company. But primarily, I do find myself on stage, and in this, I play the boyfriend, yes.
Ah, okay. Right. So where is it taking place, and some dates? And then we get into socials and websites and that. So just tell us where it is and where people can get tickets.
That is at Colab, C-O-A-L-A-B. I can't remember the the precise title, but it's Colab London. It's 22 Southwark Bridge Road, and it's running from April 22nd to May 2nd. And tickets can be purchased at www.tift.ca. And then you'll link through to Colab's website to buy the tickets, but that's the easiest one to remember, tifttalkersfortheatre.ca.
Okay, so we've got the website, but what about your social media so people can follow you as individuals and know what's coming next?
Yes.
It's really exciting. I activate and deactivate my social media all the time. But if I happen to be activated, my Instagram is Tessie Benj, TessyBenj. That's me.
Okay.
And I'm my fantastic last name, just TORONTOW at Toronto. That unique name, yes. I stole it. My cousins were all mad at me because I got it first.
Okay. Okay, one-upmanship right there.
And of course, Talk Us Free Theatre's Instagram handle is Talk Us Free Theatre, at Talk Us Free Theatre.
Okay. Tess, Michael, thank you so much for joining us on Shout Out. And I'm just going to say, break a leg.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Shout Out. LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out podcast.
That's not like you. That's normally your cup of tea, that kind of thing. Definitely not Terry's, judging by the noise you're making.
You're not choosing the music for this show ever again. Where did you find that?
So that's Destination Calabria.
Right, put it straight in the bin. Delete off the system.
A huge great track. It was a way track after your time. It only came out 14 years ago.
Well, there you go then.
I was cool with home song.
Yeah. I heard the song you had at the show last week. I heard it about for the podcast. Was less than 100 years old?
It was about a gay man who was trying to get Nancy Sinatra
too subtle
to turn him straight.
But most people go, who?
Who?
Yeah. Who what?
Yeah, who's Nancy Sinatra?
Come on.
Who's Nancy Sinatra?
I know who he is, but...
It's a bit like Pride, though, isn't it? The music on Pride stage, it's like you get the golden oldies, and I guess, you know, and then you get people that are really more modern and coming on the stage. And it's quite interesting for me. Like, I'm in my 50s, and like, I haven't got a clue sometimes. I mind you, most of the time, I think.
Well, Steph's getting a bit like that now. She's in the 90s, you know.
Oh, now this is getting, it's getting personal now. It's getting personal.
It is, isn't it, Terry?
What's going to happen next?
Yeah. So, correct me if I'm wrong, you're the second oldest here.
I am. Yes, I think I am, actually. I think I'm older than Tara, yeah.
Okay.
But I feel very much my age at the moment with my bad knee.
Your bad knee? What have you done to your knee?
I don't know. It's just bad. It's bad to walk on.
Very naughty boy.
Is it making you sort of lean to one side and limp?
Yeah, limp. That's a problem with them.
Do you want me to kick you in the other knee to sort of level you up?
Yeah. Oh. I could, couldn't I? And then I'll be broadcasting from bed.
Steph, the nurse. Could you imagine?
I was being thoughtful.
Steph would be a great nurse. LGBT people make a great nurses.
How dare you die
QIA
on me.
People.
So we ought to ask her. She'd be able to tell us exactly what Steffi's like as a nurse.
As a nurse?
Nurse.
Yeah. I've got no nursing ability at all.
Do you have a nickname for it? Like if one of you's ill and the other one takes care of it? It's like me and Carl, like the one who's ill, it's a special soldier.
Ez is very loving and very caring. So
you'll just say this because you know she's listening. I can hear my phone pinging from here.
I'll tell you the truth when the next track's on.
Special soldier. And of course, your partner used to work, your husband used to work in the NHS, didn't he?
He did, yes. He was in stroke rehab.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he used to. But when people, quite often when you have a stroke, it usually affects a good majority of one side of you.
Of course.
And it can take a lot of rehab. Yeah, and the older you are, the harder that rehab is. And he used to help people get up to be fighting fit again. So he'd still be doing it now, but in his 30s, it was getting to a point. It's very difficult lifting another human being a lot, and you have to do that a lot throughout the day. And it just got to a point that there were youngsters coming in who were like in their late teens and 20s who were like, you know, fit as fiddles by comparison. You can only really do that job for a certain amount of time before it becomes very strenuous on yourself. So, but he's very proud of the days he was there.
Yeah. I mean, as I say, a lot of LGBTQIA people work for the NHS and work for healthcare organisations because it's our calling, really, I think. Yeah. Very caring people.
Yeah, we get everywhere, really. I mean, we're in the theatre.
And the third sector
the third sector.
It's been a while since I've been told that we can change the weather.
Well, that came up the other week, didn't we?
We did.
The weather.
Don't bore the listeners with it again. Done that.
So, now, who's reading news? One of you? Both of you?
Me.
Just you.
Mr. Tense Star.
Cool. Okay, shall we get some new headlines in?
Oh, yes, of course we can. This is Shouthouse News. Welcome along. Millions of people across Hungary are celebrating after the country's long-serving Prime Minister, Viktor Orban, conceded his party's defeat in Sunday's parliamentary election. Whilst votes were still being tallied, it became clear that his far-right Fidesz party had lost its majority and fallen to second place. In a stunning political shift, the newly prominent Tisza party, led by former Fidesz insider Peter Magyar, surged from obscurity to claim first place. The result delivers a significant blow not only to Orban's 14-year tenure, but also to his international allies, including Donald Trump in the United States, and figures like Nigel Farage in Britain and Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel. It disrupts the far-right project to cement an authoritarian system in Hungary, a campaign that had drawn support from prominent US Republicans such as J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio, who visited the country to back Orban. Orban's rule since 2010 has been characterised by authoritarian measures, state-sponsored anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, harsh anti-migrant rhetoric, and legislation targeting LGBT plus people and women's rights. His government's neoliberal policies exacerbated inequality for the working class, whilst corruption became endemic at all levels of society. A proposed law in California will aim to give survivors of so-called conversion therapy significantly more time to take legal action against practitioners. The bill would extend the statute of limitations, potentially by several years or even decades, for individuals to sue for malpractice related to the discredited regime of ex-gay cults. Conversion therapy, or the ex-gay movement, refers to interventions that falsely claim to change a person's sexual orientation or gender identity. It's widely condemned as dangerous and ineffective by every major medical and mental health body, including the American Psychiatric Association, the American Psychological Association, and the American Medical Association. Research links the practice to severe psychological harm, including profound shame, trauma, depression, and increased risk of suicide among survivors. California was a pioneer in legislating against the practice, becoming the first US state to do so in 2012 to pass a law prohibiting therapists from engaging in sexual orientation change efforts with minors. Over 20 other states have since enacted similar protections. However, the legal landscape shifted following a US Supreme Court ruling in the case of Colorado, which cast extreme doubt on the enforceability of the bans. In response, the state senator Scott Wiener, a Democrat, introduced Bill SB 934 last month. In a statement, Senator Wiener said, "Conversion therapy is psychological torture," and he emphasized the need for new legal strategies. With conversion therapy bans facing legal threats from right-wing extremists and a hostile Supreme Court, we must create new strategies to protect our LGBTQ youth, he said. SB 934 will provide these safeguards. Now, for many in the LGBTQ community and its media, increasing censorship is an alarming and persistent trend. The pressure comes not only from anonymous online homophobia, but also from political rhetoric targeting our communities. The latest focal point in this battle is the acclaimed independent film Pillion, which has been edited for its digital release to secure a less restrictive age rating. The queer BDSM-themed biker romance premiered at the 2025 Cannes Film Festival, winning its section's Best Screenplay Prize and the Palme d'Or Award, alongside nominations for the Camelot d'Or and the Queer Palme. Following a successful festival and theatrical run, it opened in UK cinemas in 2025, classified 18 by the BBFC. That's the British Board of Film Classification. When it reached US theatres in early 2026, it played in a not rated version containing more explicit sexual content, including a longer, closer look at actor Alexander Skarsgård's prosthetics. However, the film moved towards a wider digital and home entertainment release, and distributor A24 was reportedly advised that an R rating from the Motion Picture Association would be more commercially viable for platforms and future licensing than an unrated cut. To obtain an R rating for sexual content, graphic nudity and language, the production agreed to edit several sequences the MPA deemed too realistic. Rather than removing entire scenes, the filmmakers shortened specific shots and softened audio elements. The goal was to meet the ratings board's demands while softening audio elements, and the demands were trying to preserve the film's narrative and emotional core. And finally, in an editorial for the US socialist magazine Mother Jones, NIO is in awe of Pope Leo XIV's claim to put down of the ranting of the Trump administration. In a précis for the popular magazine, NIO writes, "How should we think about Donald Trump's attack on the Pope? What are we to say about the president depicting himself as Jesus of Nazareth? Words like unhinged and rambling come to mind for sure, but one of the more astounding features of the president's extended rant against the Pope was how much Mr. Trump credits himself for Leo's papacy. If I wasn't in the White House, Leo wouldn't be in the Vatican," he wrote on social media. Trump also insulted the holiness of the Pope as weak on crime. Which brings up another question. Does Mr. Trump even know what the Pope does? Weak on crime, as Marianne Sadesky-Bazak noted on the Slack channel, gives the impression that the President of the United States must think of Pope Leo as some kind of big city mayor, like Tom Waltz of the Vatican. Whatever the case, Pope Leo is unbothered. He told reporters, "I have no fear of the Trump administration." Check out the rest of Inay's incisive essay in the pages of the popular US magazine Mother Jones at this web address, allthews.motherjones.com/. LGBTQ news is very much in the offing at the moment. There's been developments today in respect of the first anniversary of the transgender versus born women's rights ruling. So do remember to keep in check with community radio services and the media of our rainbow community. Read the Gay Press and check out thousands of queer podcasts that are available. Why not start with us? Our website is shoutoutradio.lgbt. For Shoutout News, I've been Terry Starr.
Shoutout News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shoutout Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shoutout.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shoutout Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Queerstory. Today's episode is about the incredible Sir Elton Hercules John. And that's because there are some lives that don't just unfold, they erupt. Bright, glittering, chaotic, and impossible to ignore. Lives that feel almost mythological in their scale, yet at their core hold something painfully, recognisably human. And his life is one of those. Before the rhinestones, before the stadiums, before the name that would echo across decades, there was a boy named Reginald Kenneth Dwight. A quiet child growing up in a post-war Britain that didn't quite know what to do with softness, sensitivity, or difference. His world was structured, rigid, defined in part by a father who was distant and critical, and a home that didn't feel entirely safe to be fully seen in. His father valued discipline, tradition, and emotional restraint. Music, unless it fit within certain acceptable boundaries, wasn't encouraged. His mother, though more outwardly supportive, brought her own complexities, volatile, unpredictable, and at times very unkind. Between them, there wasn't a consistent space where this young boy could feel accepted for who he was. But there was the piano. And it became his refuge, his language, his way of escaping. Where words failed, music spoke. Where connection was missing, melody filled the silence. He didn't just learn music, he absorbed it. It was one of the few places where he could exist without apology. But even then, something lingered beneath the surface. A sense of otherness, a quiet knowing that he didn't quite fit the mould laid out for him. In mid-20th century Britain, queerness wasn't just misunderstood, it was criminalised, pathologised and hidden. So that part of himself, the truest part perhaps, had to be buried early, not erased, just carefully concealed. As he grew, so did the divide between who he was and who he felt he had to be. Reinvention came not as luxury, but necessity. Reginald became Elton Hercules John, a deliberate act of self-creation. If the world wouldn't accept him as he was, he would build something so dazzling and undeniable that it couldn't be ignored. And it worked. Fame arrived not quietly but in a blaze, songs that felt both deeply personal and universally understood, performances that were theatrical, extravagant, unapologetically bold. The glasses grew larger, the costumes brighter, the persona bigger. It wasn't just artistry, it was armour, because underneath it all, the same questions remained. Am I enough? Am I lovable? If people truly knew me, would they stay? When he finally felt able to come out, it wasn't a simple moment of liberation. It was layered, complicated, shaped by years of internalised fear and shame. Publicly acknowledging his sexuality meant confronting not only society's judgment, but his own. It meant reconciling the boy who had to hide with the man standing in the spotlight. And even as the world began to celebrate him, internally things were far less stable. Success didn't quiet the noise. It amplified it. Drugs entered first as an enhancement, then as escape. Cocaine to stay up, alcohol to come down. Substances to blur the edges of anxiety, loneliness, and the relentless pressure of being constantly visible. Addiction for many isn't about indulgence at all. It's about relief. About finding a moment, however fleeting, where the mind softens and the ache subsides. Sex, too, became complicated. What can look like freedom from the outside can sometimes be something else entirely underneath. A search for validation, for closeness, for something real in a world that often felt performative. When your sense of self has been fractured early on, intimacy can become tangled up with worth. And then there was the body. Bulimia is rarely just about food. It's about control and trying to cope with overwhelming feelings in a way that feels tangible and immediate. In a life that had spiralled into excess, scrutiny and chaos, it became another quiet battle, one that didn't always make headlines, but was no less consuming. From the outside, it might have looked like everything was there: success, admiration, wealth, influence. But internally, there was still a war being fought. This is the part that often gets lost in the retelling of iconic lives, the cost. Because for a long time, survival looked like performance, but something shifted. Not overnight, not neatly, and certainly not without difficulty. Recovery rarely is. It's messy, it requires confronting not just behaviours but the pain underneath them, the unmet needs, the unresolved wounds, the beliefs formed in a childhood that quietly dictate how we move through the world now. Choosing sobriety meant choosing to feel fully, without numbing, without escape routes, and that's terrifying. It meant facing the loneliness he'd been running from, the grief of relationships that never gave what was needed. The anger and the shame, the fear without the substances, without the persona dialed up to its highest setting, while there might be nothing left. But what he found instead was something else. Clarity, authenticity. A version of himself that didn't need to be constantly defended or disguised. This is not to say everything became easy, it didn't, but it became real, and there is a quiet power in that. He began to build a life that wasn't just about surviving or performing, but about living. Relationships that were grounded rather than chaotic. Creativity that came from a place of truth rather than urgency. A sense of self that wasn't entirely dependent on external validation. and then something else began to grow alongside that healing, purpose beyond the self. At a time when HIV and AIDS were surrounded by fear, stigma, and devastating loss, he stepped into a role that went far beyond the music. Through the work of the Elton John AIDS Foundation, he became part of a global effort to fund research, support communities, and challenge the silence that had allowed so many to suffer unseen. This wasn't just charity, it was personal. It was about loss, witnessing, refusing to look away. It was about using visibility not as armour but as a tool, about saying we're here, we matter, and we deserve care, dignity, and life. And in doing so, he became something more than an icon. He became a bridge between generations, between grief and hope, between a time when being openly queer could cost you everything, and a present where, while still imperfect, there is more space to exist openly. For many LGBTQI plus people, especially those who grew up in eras of silence and shame, seeing someone like him survive, not just exist, but thrive, mattered. It offered a glimpse of possibility that you could be out, complicated, flawed, creative, and still build a wonderful life. And for younger generations now, that legacy continues, not as perfection, but as proof. Proof that you can come from a difficult beginning and still create something extraordinary. That you can lose yourself and find your way back. That addiction doesn't define you, but it does ask something of you. That identity isn't something you perform, it's something you come home to. And that perhaps the most radical act of all is not becoming someone else, but allowing yourself to be fully who you are. There's a line often unspoken between who we think we need to be and who we actually are. For some, that line is thin. For others, it stretches across years, across identities, across entire lives. This is a story of crossing that line. Not perfectly, not cleanly, but honestly. And in that honesty, there is something profoundly human. Because beyond the music, beyond the image, beyond the legacy, what remains is this. A person who learned over time that being seen is not the same as being known, and who eventually chose both, and in doing so helped others believe they could too. And that brings me to the end of this queer story. I'll be back soon.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Well, are you a big fan of Elton?
That's a good survivor song, that is, isn't it? Yeah. You know, you put that on, that's a real sense of strength in that song. Yes, yeah, I am.
That was a lovely queer story there.
That was a really good, really good episode. And they're all brilliant, but that was particularly good. Talking about a man who's, you know, very complex, but has thrived.
So I love the middle survived. Name. I love the middle name he picked for himself.
I didn't know that.
No,
that
I
was,
didn't
that
know
was
that
new
either.
On me. I didn't know he was Hercules.
No, I didn't. So, but it's a very Elton John thing to do, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
I don't know if he's better or not. Last I heard, he was having quite a lot of issues with his vision.
Oh, right.
Was it The Devil Wears Prada he helped write a lot of the music for?
Okay.
And he went to see the performance and basically couldn't see it but could hear it.
Oh, bless him.
And was really struggling. I haven't seen any updates about... he won't be listening to us, but if you are, I hope you're well, Elton.
Yeah.
Please say hello. Yeah. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, decades of success. Decades of success is well earned as well. Yeah.
Did you see the film?
Which one?
With Taron Egerton.
Yeah,
I know the one you mean.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Great actor to take off Elton John like that. And actually do the singing as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've just been, we've just binge watched a few films. Kingsman.
Oh, he's in that as well.
He's in the second one of that, and he's been kidnapped by the evil woman who owns the island, and she's going to pollute the world and the like. And I've never laughed so much in my life because he's just like, you know, F off. He's going whenever she walks in. It's like, play for me. He's just like, no.
I think Elton John can take the mic out of himself a little bit, can't he?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So it's been a while. He's been married to David Furniss.
Oh, well, years.
Many years.
15 years.
In fact, I think they've got two boys, haven't they? Probably teenagers.
They're grown up now. Yeah, they got two children. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember being very inspired by that back when they did it. He's always kind of been on that kind of like forefront of being...
Yeah, and not caring what people no. think about him, you know. I mean,
was it his wedding he turned up with like a boat on his head and a ball gown behind
him? I can't remember.
Did you remember? It was very Elton.
Yeah,
that was just
course.
Like, good on you, go for it.
But yeah, you know. Superb piano player. I saw his performances... Farewell last performance at Glastonbury, was it last year? And it was a superb show, and the audience loved him.
Yeah,
you know, they came, you know, and yeah, perhaps he'll do some more, but I think he's going to retire to the studios now.
I wouldn't surprise me. You know, so, are you an Elton fan?
Oh, yes, yeah. Absolutely, love his music.
Yeah,
yeah, a very tough life he had, and but he came through it. He's found somebody who loves him, and he got two great kids, he's powered through it, because he could have easily just fallen apart.
Well, not only that, he's
alcohol,
also,
drugs.
Yeah, and he's helped other people, hasn't he, as well, like Robbie Williams. Yeah. He helps Robbie kick the habit as well.
And he puts so much money into charities as well, especially the AIDS charity.
Yeah,
and worked with Princess Di as well, didn't he?
Oh, weren't they like best of friends or something?
Oh, they were very close. Yeah.
They used to sneak into nightclubs, and he used to dress her up as a guy and smuggle her in. Was the
that wasn't that with Kenny Everett? Kenny Everett and Freddie Mercury?
Was it?
Cleo de Rocca says that. Yeah, Princess Diana was round the house and said. Kenny Everett's house and said, I really don't know what to do tonight, I'm bored. And they said, what are you doing? We're going to the clubs. I think it might be the Culhern in London, which was a leather bar at the time. And she said, I wish I could come. And they said, well, why not? You know, we'll dress you up and put a fake moustache on you. And allegedly, and there are people that said this is totally true, Princess Diana masqueraded as a leather queen on the
Can
scene
you imagine? That'd be brilliant.
For one Saturday night.
Love that story. I hope that's true. Brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, we'll never really know, but yeah, you'd like to think it would be. Mm.
Who's that present for behind you?
That's for me.
Okay.
That's some Tara.
Okay, are you going to open it?
I have opened it.
Yeah. I haven't seen it. Are you going to open the bottle?
But no, I've got to drive home. Yeah.
Not going to drink on air either.
No. Yeah.
Drink
no,
and drive. No, it makes us bad for you.
Well, we could rush out the studio, have a swig, and come back in. That's not technically drinking.
You're going to get bent to bath.
So, in case you're wondering what she's on, it was my birthday on Monday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear. What's your name again? Happy birthday to you.
Are we allowed to reveal your age, or we should never ask?
I was 48. Yeah.
Yes.
Youngin. So 16 years we've been doing this. I was a lot younger and had hair when we started doing Shout Out.
I remember you having hair. Gosh.
So for my sins, yeah. So no, had a week off. We've been my husband very good. He took me to pasture. Do you know pasture? It's opposite St Mary Redcliffe here in Bristol. It's a steak restaurant. Because steak is just my favourite. Apologies to all the veggies out there, but I'm sorry. You know, some of us do eat meat. And I have to say, of all of the steak I've ever had in Bristol, that one by far is the best ever. So, yeah, if you're after a restaurant recommendation, that would be right up at the top there. Okay. If you like steak with an experience, go to Mugshots, which is in St Nicholas Market. It's on the same street. It's just a bit down from Seamus O'Donnell's.
Oh, right, yes.
That's slightly different because they do that with a hot rock. So they'll bring you whatever cut of steak you ask for, which has been it's been flash fried, so it's not completely red or anything.
Yeah.
But they bring out a big lava stone that's at 600 degrees, and you have different flavour butters, and you put the butter on the rock and cook your own bits of meat. So it's like a modern day equivalent of fondue back in the day.
Yeah. I did Argentino, the one up in White Ladies.
I've not done that yet. I've heard that's really good. Is that the one with the card that you turn upside down?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Because I heard it was the same chain. They've come from, because there was one
in London, and there's one
and then one in Birmingham.
I'm not sure.
And I've been to one in Birmingham because I went there on my stag do, and they've got skewers of meat and they have barbecues inside.
Oh, no.
And it's an Argentinian place, and you get a little card and it says feed me on one side and stop on the other. and they just walk along and they'll have like a skewer of chicken, a skewer of beef, a skewer of lamb, and they just keep putting it on your plate until you turn your card upside down.
I know, there's like different cuts on the menu board and you can choose and then add your vegetables and your chips.
Ez just sent some info about Elton John that we didn't know the info of. He lost his sight in his right eye due to severe infection, which was made daily tasks like reading difficult. Despite having multiple surgeries and losing his prostate, right hip and both knees, he is battling on remaining active and focusing on family reports. The kids' names are Zachary and Elijah. And the biological parentage, I did not know this. The couple mixed their sperm, meaning one son is likely biologically related to Elton and the other to David. But they have never confirmed this, stating they are equal parents to both.
Good on them.
Did not know that. What
surrogacy is it in America?
Do you want to hear another fun fact about Bristol as well? We're according to Deliveroo, Brits get the Aperol spritz out as soon as the temperature hits 16 degrees. And apparently orders for Aperol go through the roof the minute that the sun comes out. There are several cities up there on the list where it happens most, and Bristol's number 6.
Okay.
So, have you ever had an Aperol spritz?
No.
Can't say I have, no.
Yes, every time I go to Italy, I have an Aperol spritz, and about midday. So it's coffee in the morning, a latte macchiato with a croissant.
How would you describe it?
With marmalade and an Aperol spritz at lunchtime, because when you get an Aperol spritz in Italy, it comes with a side plate of nuts and olives and stuff. So if you ask for a drink, they bring you your lunch for nothing.
But you can get it on Deliveroo too.
Well, Aperol spritz ain't going to be the same. They cheat over here.
Because
it's got the Aperol in it, and it's got Prosecco. No, there's no Prosecco. You watch them make it over here. They dilute it. It's fizzy water.
Oh, dear.
Man, go to Italy for the real thing.
Yeah, we'll have an Aperol spritz this weekend. Anyway, that's it for this week. If you have an event or a story, or perhaps you'd even like to get involved with LGBT Plus Radio, check us out online and get in touch. We'd love to hear from you.
All our shows are available in podcasts and all good services, as well as our website, shoutoutradio.lgbt.
We'll be back same time, same place next week. From myself, from Terry, from Steph, and from Tara, and by proxy, the lovely Ez. So bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.
Shout out.
LGBT Radio for you.